Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had a son who was a Rav in a region in Minsk, in part of Minsk. And he went to visit his son on one occasion, and I read this in a sefer, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but something very disgraceful happened on a communal level while Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was there. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very, very upset with the way that the communal leadership handled it. And people wanted to go to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter to try to appease him, to try to explain, but they were afraid of him. They saw he was so angry, he was so upset. He was so passionate about how disappointed he was in the leadership that no one wanted to approach him. And there was a tzaddik, his name was Rav Elia Kretinger, sometimes referred to as Rav Alinka Kretinger. Interesting name. So Rav Elia Kretinger decided, I'm going to go. He was one of the great gedolim of that tkufa in that place, in that time. And he decided, I'm going to go to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and try to appease him. So he walks in and he speaks to him in learning. And he says, Rabbi Yisrael, can we talk about a Gemara, a famous Gemara? So he says, sure. So he says, the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Gimel, the story of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and his son. Everyone knows the story. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai went into a cave for 12 years, learning with his son, hiding from Roman persecution. And he comes out of the cave after 12 years, and he's burning people up with his eyes because he sees that they're plowing and they're planting. And Shimon Bar Yochai is so upset. They're giving up a life of Torah for plowing and planting. Hevel havalim. And Rishimon and his son, Rashbi and his son, are literally burning up people on their fields, destroying things with their eyes. And a baskal comes out, a heavenly voice rings out and says, Rabbi Shimon, did you come out of your cave to destroy my world? Go back to the cave. So Rishimon Bar Yochai goes back to the cave with his son, Rabbi Elazar, for one more year, and they come out at the end of that year. And Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai has a very positive perspective. So Rav Elia Kretinger said to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, let me ask you a question. Mima nafshach, I don't understand. If the people were truly guilty, like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, of abandoning a life of Torah to pursue the pleasures and the success of Olam Hazeh, then Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was right. And he was burning them up with his eyes because he was correct. So why did Hashem scream at him and say, go back to the cave? And if Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was a kanoi, and he was wrong, and he was too extreme, so then Hashem should not have allowed him to have these supernatural powers to burn people's fields up with his eyes. So I don't understand. If Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was right, why did Hashem rebuke him? And if Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was wrong, so why did Hashem allow him to exact vengeance against those people, to punish those people, to destroy their fields? So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter smiled, and he said, you tell me, Rav Elia. So Rav Elia said to him, he said, you see, it depends on the nature of a person's eyes. It depends on the nature of a person's perspective. If one looks with Midas HaDin, then Einach Hanami, the din was just. In other words, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, if he's going to take on a perspective of Midas HaDin, he could destroy their field, and rightfully so. The complaint against them was fair. On a certain level, if you approach it with Midas HaDin, it's justified. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu rebuked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai because there's another way to use your eyes. You don't have to look with an eye towards Midas HaDin. There's a way to look with eyes of mercy and to realize that while Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, if he wants to demand it, he may be correct, but it's also, there's a way to look with eyes of Rachmanis. There's a way to not hold people to such high standards, the standards of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the one hand said, Rabbi Shimon, you're justified in destroying their fields. Me'ikar HaDin, you're correct, but I don't want you to spend your life seeing the world that way. And Rav Elia Kretinger made his point to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, you're right, you have a right to be upset at these people. They deserve to be rebuked for what they did wrong, but have rachmanis. And understand that sometimes you have to just look at people in a gentle way, look at a situation in a gentle way. Why do I share this story with you in particular? Well, it's Parshas Korach, which we'll get to in a few moments, but it's also Chodesh Tammuz. We've entered into Chodesh Tammuz. And we know the Bnei Yisachar brings from the Arizal that each of the months correspond to a different part of the skull, of the face, the different Evari HaRosh, and Tammuz and Av correspond to the right and to the left eye. And therefore, it's not surprising to us that during these Parshios, during this time of the year, as the month of Tammuz, of course, is a time of Midas HaDin, and the month of Av is a time of Midas HaDin, and our hope is that we should be able to transform these days into days of chesed and rachamim. It's not surprising to us that these are days that correspond to the eyes. days that correspond to perspective, something that we've spoken about many times in the past. Rabbi Daniel, I hope I'm not giving you too much chazara here. We'll get to some new things as well. But that's what these parashas are about. And that's what this Tkuvas Hashanah is about. Tammuz and Av is a time of perspective. Parsha Shlach, how did the Meraglim see the land? Parshas Korach, how did he see Moshe and Aaron? Chukas, Balak, Pinchas. I was adding it up today. I went through the Chumash at least 25 times in these parshas that we read in Tammuz and Av during this period of Midas Adin, of Shlach and Korach, Chukas, Balak, Pinchas. At least 25 times you find the Shoresh for the Hebrew word I and Yud Nun. Again, in various permutations. But the Hebrew word Ayin appears over and over and over again. Because it's Hashem's way of saying to us, these are days of perspective. How do I choose to see situations? So let's talk about this week's Parsha, Parshas Korach. And again, if we can develop the right eyes, then hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look towards us with those eyes of mercy that Rav Elia Kritinger was begging Rav Yisrael Salanter to look at that community in Minsk with. And the same way that Hashem told Rishum Bar Yochai, there's a different way to see it. Even if you're right, there's a way to see with merciful eyes. In Korach, at the beginning of the parsha, we find the famous words of Rashi. V'Korach shepikeya choya ma ra'a l'shtus zeh. Korach, you're a smart person. Korach, you're a tzaddik. Korach is not a lightweight. We can't push him aside so easily. Korach was one of the ziknei hador. And Korach, you're a pikeach. You're very smart. So, ma ra l'shtus zeh? How did you get involved in this foolishness? And Rashi answers in two words, eino hitato, his eye deceived him. Rashi goes on and explains what that means, how he saw into the future and he was misled by his understanding of things. But in two words, eino hitato, his eye led him astray. His perspective was off. So I saw a beautiful vart from Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg Zatzal. Rav Scheinberg passed away in 2012. He was someone who used to visit our community fairly regularly. I had the schus to sit with him one time, be a chidus. I asked him a foolish question, and he gave me a very wise answer. And Rav Scheinberg asked the following questions on Korach. I don't understand. Korach, why is Rashi saying, Korach, ma ra'a l'shtus zeh? How did he get involved with this foolishness? Why are you calling it foolish? Just say what it is. It was wicked. It was a rishus. Why is Rashi calling it foolish? Korach's actions were wicked. They weren't foolish. That's question number one. And secondly, Rav Scheinberg asked the question based on the Medrash. The Medrash says that Korach was incited to his rebellion by his wife. How did that happen? His wife said to him, look what Moshe does. He appoints his own brother Aaron as the Kohen Gadol and leaves you to carry the heavy Aaron. It's not right. He left a burdensome job to you and he gave a more delightful position to his brother Aaron. So says Rav Scheinberg, hold on a second, what's she talking about? Don't we know from Chazal that the nature of the Aaron was that it was no seyas no sa'av, that it carried those who carried it? You didn't carry the Aaron. Those who were assigned to the carrying, in quotes, of the Aaron were carried by the Aaron. So what was she talking about? She says, oh, Moshe gave you such a hard job, such a burdensome job to carry the heavy Aaron. It's simply not true. What was his wife talking about? Why did he listen to her? What was her complaint? And Rav Scheinberg says a yesod, which again, many have this yesod, but he develops it in his own way. And that is, the ease or difficulty of anything that you're going to do in life is going to be in accordance with your perspective. If you want to see the Aaron as heavy and burdensome, even if the emes is the opposite, if you bring that perspective to the table, that's going to become your reality. The Aaron which is carrying you will seem like a burden to you. And Rav Scheinberg explains, that's the foolishness of Korach. Yes, Korach's actions were also wicked, but it was foolish to choose such a perspective. It was foolish to believe something that wasn't true. It was foolish to convince himself of something that didn't have to be. He quotes the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph that at the end of days, La'asid Lavo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring the Yetzirah and is going to shecht the Yetzirah in front of Tzadikim and Rasham. And Tzadikim nidma lehem kahar gavoa. For Tzadikim, the Yetzirah is going to look like a big mountain that they conquered. For Rasham, it's going to look like a little hair, a string. And they're both going to be crying. The Tzadikim are going to cry and say, wow, I can't believe we conquered this big mountain. And the Rasham are going to say, wow, I can't believe we didn't even have any success against this little string. What's the pshat? Says Rav Scheinberg. Which is it? Is the Yetzirah daunting? Is the Yetzirah easy? The answer is that for the tzaddikim, they're so dedicated, they're so devoted to defeating the Yetzirah that when they're in the battle, they don't even realize that it's such a big mountain, that it's such a challenge. It is such a challenge. Lamaisa, it is such a challenge. But they've taken on a perspective that I'm going to get the job done, that throughout their entire life, the tzaddik is just winning those battles. At the end, Hashem says, you realize how big of a battle you won? The tzaddik says, I hardly realized it. Because when you have a perspective that's proper, that I have to defeat the Yetzirah, so that becomes your reality. But a Rosh who spent his whole life convincing himself in this world that the Yetzirah is too big, Hashem shows him the truth at the end of his life that was all excuses. It didn't have to be so big. It could have been a small strand that could easily be severed if you would have made a little bit of effort. So says Rav Scheinberg, yes, Korach's actions were wicked, but they were more foolish than anything else. He convinced himself that I can't carry the Aron. His wife told him something that simply wasn't true. And he allowed that to become his perspective. And that's what Rashi means. Eino hitato. He allowed his perspective to deceive him. It's so scary because sometimes things which could be so clear when we're thinking straight, when we're seeing right, olam hafuch ra'isi, we see the whole world backwards. I saw a beautiful vart from the Rupshitzer. Rav Naftali of Rupshitzer said the following vart. Think about this. It's so true. It's mamish so true. A person who wants to see in the wrong way can see everything so backwards. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Parakuf Vav. Listen to the pasuk. Vayikanu l'moshe b'machane l'aron kedosh Hashem. They were jealous of Moshe in the camp. Vayikanu l'moshe b'machane l'aron kedosh Hashem. And Aaron, the Holy One of Hashem. It's Tehillim Parakuf Vav, Pasuk Tes Zayin, for those taking notes. So the Rupshitzer said, what is the nature of people who like to initiate controversy? What's the nature of people who like to incite rebellion? They always find fault with righteous people. Whatever the tzaddik does, they find some twisted and crooked way of looking at it backwards. So for example, if the tzaddik sits by himself and he learns and he's alone in his avodas Hashem and he's quarantined from the world just trying to work on himself, they say, look at this, he thinks he's such a big tzaddik, he's not concerned with the community, he's not involved with communal affairs, he sets himself apart, who does he think he is, he's better than everyone else. And if the tzaddik is involved in communal affairs, so then they complain to the tzaddik, who are you? Go back to your Gemara. What are you doing poking your head into communal affairs? Why are you meddling in politics? It's rabbinic overreach. What are you doing? Stay out of this. It's not your business to issue decrees and statements. Go back to learning Shas and Poskim. So says the Rupshitzer, that's the pshat on the pasuk. Vayikanu l'moshe b'machana. Moshe, who we know pitched his tent outside the camp, they said, Moshe, why aren't you more involved in the Machana? Why are you always on the top of our Sinai? What type of leadership is this? Get involved with the people. Tell us what to do. Why are you always so aloof? Why are you so disconnected from the needs of the people? And Aaron, who of course is the Oyev Shalom V'Rodev Shalom, Aaron HaKohen, who's so busy making peace amongst the people and he's in the camp, what do they say to Aaron? La'aron, Kedosh Hashem, Aaron, get out of here. They say, Aaron, stop getting so involved with people. Go back to the Kodesh Kedoshim, you're a Kohen Gadol. Get out of here. This is not your business. And unfortunately, that's always how it is. That's always how it is. You don't do enough, you do too much. A person who wants to complain, a person who wants to initiate controversy and to incite rebellion is always going to find a way to see things backwards. The Kotzker says, just think about the claim that Korach made against Moshe. It's a simple vart, says the Kotzker, but it's so true. Korach has the chutzpah to say to Moshe and Aaron at the beginning of the parsha, Perek Tes Zayin Pasuk Gimel, Vayikahalu al Moshe va'al Aaron. They gathered against Moshe and Aaron, and they said to Moshe and Aaron, Rav Lechem, you've overstepped, you have too much authority. Madua tisnasu al kahal Hashem. Why do you think you're better than everyone else? Says the Kotzker, chutzpah, the Moshe Rabbeinu, who the Torah says is anov ma'od mikola adam asher al panei adama. You're accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of using his authority, of wanting more and more kavod. It's the most chutzpahic thing you could possibly say. It's the very opposite of everything Moshe Rabbeinu is. That Moshe and Aaron, vayikalu al Moshe val Aaron, the same Moshe and Aaron who said, v'nachnu ma, an expression of humility, what are we? It's mamish the opposite of the truth. But that's how people who unfortunately have a backwards perspective see reality. And that's what happened with Korach. His eye deceived him. That's what all these parshios are about. Bilam, who Chazal say, had one eye, an evil eye that he put on Klal Yisrael. a person with the wrong perspective could take a holy situation or a holy person and vina hafachu, turn the whole thing around. And by tzaddikim, it's the exact opposite. By tzaddikim who have pure eyes, who have holy eyes, who have gentle eyes, who have the eyes like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai coming out of the cave that second time, who are able to see it in the situation, they could take the biggest rishus in the world and turn it into something so sweet and find the good. I was learning at the beginning of this whole of coronavirus. I had a sefer out of my desk from Rav Yaakov Meir Schechter. His volume on Midos, on character development. So he tells a story from Rav Yosef Zonnenfeld. Rav Zonnenfeld, of course, was the co-founder of the Eidah Haredis in Yerushalayim, one of the great personalities of the old city of Yerushalayim. Passed away in 1932, a Talmud of the Sofer, the son of the Chassam Sofer. So Rav Yaakov Meir Schechter tells a story. He said Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld was walking in the Shuk one time. He was walking in a marketplace. And he walks past some Arab, and this Arab sees this holy-looking Jew, and as a sign of, you know, disregard for him, contempt, he takes some shells. I don't know if he was eating, you know, garinim or had an orange peel, whatever it was. He takes some shells or some peels, and he throws it at Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, and he hits the tzaddik with his peels, with his empty peanut shells. He throws them at the tzaddik. So Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld walks over to him. Mamish b'sever panim yafo, smiling from ear to ear. And he says to this Yishmaeli, he says to him in Arabic, I don't know how to say it in Arabic, he says, thank you very much. So he says, thank you very much. He says, what are you talking about? I threw them at you because, you know, what are you saying thank you for? I threw the peels at you as a sign of disgust, my disgust towards you. Listen to Rabbi Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. Only a tzaddik could say such a thing. He says, but I want to thank you. You could have thrown a rock. Could have thrown a rock at my head. Thank you so much for only throwing little peels. It didn't hurt at all. And I'm so appreciative. You could have really hurt me. And when the Arab saw how he took such a situation and turned the whole thing around, he was so nispal from it. He started begging for Rav Zonnenfeld's forgiveness. He said, you're a holy rabbi, a holy, holy man. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. He couldn't believe that a person could see such a situation in such a way. But that's the way of the tzaddikim. Vina hafachu, to take again a broken situation and to make something so beautiful out of it. I read this past Shabbos, Rabbi Lam's drushos, Rabbi Lam who passed away very recently, Rabbi Norman Lam, drushos ledoros, drushot ledorot, on Numbers, on Bamidbar. It's a short volume, I read through the whole thing this past Shabbos. His shloshim's coming up in just a couple of days. And I wrote down, I marked down my favorite part. There's an amazing drusha he has in Parshas Balak called From Curse to Blessing. And I want to read you just a little bit of it, because it captures, again, the perspective that is so uniquely Jewish, to be able to take something bad and to turn it into something good, to see in the right way, Tammuz and Av, months of perspective, to not fall into that trap, Korach, you're a pikeach, you were so smart, but you fell into such a shtus, such a foolish thing to give into this wrongful perspective. He starts off by talking about some words that we utter as we walk into shul, at the very beginning of our siddur, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. You know, if you wake someone up in the middle of the night and you said, who said, what's the source for Matovu Alecha Yaakov? I don't know, that's a pasuk in Tehillim, David HaMelech, who said Matovu Alecha Yaakov? In fact, it's Bilam HaRasha Yamach Shemo V'Zichro, who said, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, how godly and beautiful are your tents, how goodly are your tents, how wonderful are the tents of Torah and Tefillah. And we walk into a shul and we say these words of one of the greatest Rishonim of all time, who wanted to destroy the Jewish people. Can you imagine walking into shul and starting with like a famous aphorism from Hitler, Yimach Shemo? It's really not that different. So why do we start davening with Matovu Alecha, which again was really somewhat of a bracha, but it was really meant to be a curse of Bilam? And Rabbi Lam writes that we say Matovu not despite the fact that it was intended to harm us, but because of that very fact. What more Jewish way to walk into shul, to begin our day, to begin my morning conversation with Hashem, than to say, yeah, Hashem, I'm very much aware of the fact that there are going to be people who try to harm me. But it is Jewish, listen to the words of Rabbi Lam, Zatzal, it is Jewish to find the benediction in the malediction, the good in the evil, the opportunity in the catastrophe. And therefore, again, he says, it's not despite the fact that it was intended to harm us, but because of that. It's very Jewish to dafka take the thing that was intended to harm us and to turn it around. And then Rabbi Lam goes on to tell the story of Franz Rosenzweig. Franz Rosenzweig was one of the great Jewish philosophers of the early 20th century, passed away in 1929. His personal story is amazing. His writings are not so easy to read. I've tried, not so successfully. But he was a German Jew. He was what'd you say?
What's his first name?
Franz Rosenzweig.
Franz
Rosenzweig. Franz Rosenzweig was a German Jew who was prepared to convert to Christianity and decided, well, if I'm going to convert to Christianity, I need to understand the underpinnings of Christianity, which is Judaism. So he finally decided maybe I should study my Judaism a little bit more. And it's an amazing story. As he was using Judaism as a stepping stone to his new faith, he discovered Judaism is actually very beautiful. And there's an amazing experience that he had one year on Yom Kippur. It's really a Pintel Yid story. At the Ilah on Yom Kippur, in some small Orthodox synagogue in Germany, he went through this awesome transformation and decided to become a Jew. And he became a great Jewish philosopher, an Orthodox Jew, a person who criticized the Reform, and in doing so, kept many Jews on the proper path of true Torah Judaism. And at the prime of his life in 1922, lo aleinu v'lo aleichem, he had a terrible cerebral hemorrhage that caused him to experience partial paralysis and eventually complete paralysis. And listen to the words of Rabbi Lam, because again, his language is so beautiful. The widely traveled searcher could not move. The able lecturer could not speak. The writer could not move his hands, could hardly even dictate notes. Surely this should have killed him. Surely this should have marked the end of a fruitful and promising career. And think about it. Think about the bitterness of a person who, so to speak, sacrificed so much for Hashem, who dedicated himself to find his way back. And then this is what happens. Complete paralysis. A person who's trying to educate other Jews in his unique way. But no, says Rabbi Lam, but no. Rosenzweig had rediscovered Judaism, and with it, its inarticulate but very real insights. And so he learned to wring fortune from misfortune. He dictated, listen to this, it's unbelievable. He dictated numerous letters, scholarly articles, and books to his wife by virtue of a special machine. His wife would turn a dial with the alphabet, and he would nod ever so slightly at the letter he wanted. Thus, mind you, were letters, articles, diaries, and books written, letter by letter. Can you imagine? A scholarly person, a mind that had so much to share, so many ideas to develop, and to painstakingly to dictate to his wife with a little dial and a little machine, letter by letter, to be able to write articles, to write diaries, to write books, to write essays. Nor was this only a flurry of panic activity, something to make him forget. No, it was a state of mind. It was the Jewish genius ever seeking the spark in the shell, the blessing in the curse. Shortly after the onset of illness, he wrote the following. Listen to these words. It's impossible to say such a thing. Only a Yid could say such a thing. If I must be ill, I want to enjoy it. In a sense, these 2 months have been quite pleasant. For one thing, after a long spell, I got back to reading books. This from a man who couldn't move a limb and who couldn't pronounce one consonant intelligibly. And listen now to what the same man wrote 7 years later, 1929, just before his death. I read, carry on business, and all in all, I enjoy life. Besides, I have something looming in the background for the sake of which I am almost tempted to call this period the richest of my life. It is simply true. Dying is even more beautiful than living. Concludes Rabbi Lam, what a conversion of curse to blessing. And that's the opposite of what Korach did. Korach had so much good going for him. He was part of the ruling class. He wasn't Moshe and he wasn't Aaron, but he couldn't accept that. And Korach shepikeachai amah ra'al l'shtus zeh. What did he do to himself? Eino itato. He destroyed himself with his corrupted perspective. So what do we choose to see and how do we choose to see it? I had a conversation today on the phone with a very, very sincere young woman. She had a very important and an honest question in her Avodas Hashem, a nuanced issue that she was grappling with. And we were talking about it. And I said to her, I paused at one point, and I said to her on the phone, I said, let me ask you a question. Eating on Yom Kippur, good or bad? She says, bad. I said, driving on Shabbos, good or bad? Driving on Shabbos, bad. I said, the question that you asked me, whatever it was, I don't want to get into it right now. The question you asked me, right? Good or bad? So she says to me, bad question mark? So I said, you failed the test and you got all three questions wrong. I said, eating on Yom Kippur, good or bad, depends. If you're sick, eating on Yom Kippur is a mitzvah. driving on Shabbos, good or bad? The answer is depends. If you're taking a woman who's pregnant to the hospital to deliver a baby, it's a great mitzvah. Not driving would be a terrible aveira. The question that you asked me, depending on the context, it depends. Right? Everything depends on a person's perspective. What eyes do you bring to it? It's easy to look at it in a superficial way and to just say, this is no good and that is no good. But if you look with the eye, again, that a Jew was supposed to have in Tammuz and Av and during these parshios, again, it's an eye of positivity. It's those gentle, merciful eyes that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai developed in that 13th year in the cave. I want to conclude tonight because it would be a terrible failure on my part if I didn't mention a thing or two about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. After all, tonight is Gimel Tammuz, the yard site of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Tonight's the 26th yard site of Rabbi Nachum Mendel Schneerson Zatzal. And I remember as a 13-year-old boy hearing on the radio on 1010 Winds. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, but I remember being in New York and visiting my cousins. And I remember hearing on the radio the announcement that Lubavitcher Rebbe had passed away. There's probably no Jewish leader, maybe leader of any type in the modern era, who had such eyes like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He happened to have had beautiful physical eyes as well. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe has such beautiful eyes, such amazing perspective. If anyone wants a good book, I don't remember. It's a wonderful book called Positivity Bias by Mendel Kalmanson, Practical Wisdom for Positive Living, inspired by the life and teachings of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Positivity Bias is the name of the volume. So I want to end just by telling you a couple quick stories from this book. Again, the amount of stories of Lubavitcher Rebbe's perspective are endless, endless, endless. There was a Jew who came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe and he said, Rebbe, I feel like a hypocrite. I feel like a hypocrite when I go to shul on Yom Kippur because I don't go the rest of the year. No, what does a tzaddik do? He always turns it around. Lubavitcher Rebbe said, what are you talking about? Going to shul on Yom Kippur? You're not a hypocrite for going to shul on Yom Kippur. You may be a little bit of a hypocrite for not going the rest of the year. But on Yom Kippur, you're not a hypocrite for going. What was the Lubavitcher Rebbe saying? He was saying, that's who you really are. The real you goes to shul. The fact that you do it, he saw himself as a Jew who never goes to shul and once a year goes on Yom Kippur and I'm a phony. Lubavitcher Rebbe said, no, Yom Kippur you're real. The rest of the year you're a phony. Only a tzaddik could turn it around to make a person feel so comfortable, so welcome, to feel that this is the real me. On page 150, Chaim Gutnick from Australia told the story. He said he called the Lubavitcher Rebbe one time. He said, Rebbe, I'm trying to give this class. I put together these beautiful shiurim on marriage and motherhood for Jewish women. And he said, I worked so hard to prepare these classes. And one woman showed up. One person came to attend my shiur. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe said to him, and he was so down on himself. He said, I'm wasting my time preparing. I worked so hard to prepare this shiur. I thought it would be an attractive topic. People would want to learn. One person came, one woman came to the shiur. So the Rebbe said, and how many mothers did Moshe Rabbeinu have? Moshe Rabbeinu had one mother. So what, you don't think you could change the world by educating this one Jewish woman? Lubavitcher Rebbe turned the whole thing around. He made him feel like what he was doing was the most important thing in the world. A family came one time. Parents came with their child. One last story for tonight. He came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe on Chanukah one time. There was zochet yechidus with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a private audience with the Rebbe on Chanukah. So they come into the Rebbe, and the Rebbe offers some Chanukah gel to their little son. And the kid, for whatever reason, didn't want it. Imagine the Lubavitcher Rebbe, you know? No one ever came to the Rebbe on Sunday for dollars. The Rebbe gave out a dollar, and someone said, like, maybe a $5 bill or a $10. So the Rebbe offered this kid Chanukah gel. And the kid, nah, no thanks. I don't do it with the money. I don't give me a lollipop or something. You know, give me a toy I can play with. He said, no. The Rebbe tried a few times to give him the money. Nah. The parents were mortified. They were so embarrassed. They're trying to get their kids to just take the money. So the Rebbe looks at the parents and says, it's such a good sign. It's so beautiful. It's a sign that he's not someone who craves money. You know how many people suffer from the taiva of amassing wealth? It's so beautiful that your son doesn't, he's no interest in money. I'm not offended at all. It's a beautiful midah. It's a beautiful character trait. He didn't see it as the child being stubborn or being chutzpahdik or being ungrateful. He saw it as a child. He saw everything. He saw it in a positive way. Those were the eyes of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And again, just to come full circle once again, Korach acted wicked. Yes, says Rav Scheinberg. Yes, Korach did act wicked. He was a tzaddik. Korach was also a tzaddik, but he made a terrible choice, and it was wicked. But Rashi doesn't call it wicked. Rashi calls it foolish, because how a person chooses to see a situation is exactly that. It's a choice. A person has to choose how he wants to see things. So Mir Tzashem, we should be zochen, these days of Midas Hadin. They should be days of Rachamim. We have two eyes. We have an eye that sometimes sees so negatively, but we have another eye, an inner eye, that only wants to see the good. And Hashem should help us to see the good in everything around us, and Mirtz Hashem, Hashem will look at us with eyes of rachmim during these days of din. Thank you all very much. Have a wonderful night, and...